you don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
You can work from the road while turning your vehicle into a powerful high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On a network that covers more roads than any other carrier, connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to see if you're eligible for a free trial today. Based on independent third-party data, always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Hi, I'm Pete Buttigieg, and this is The Deciding Decade. Like everyone else, a big part of how I unwind is through laughter, with friends, but also watching comedy on TV or the internet. It's always been a strange relief to see political events that upset us parodied. It's a reminder of how absurd reality can be. But the Trump era has brought us to a point that is almost beyond satire. Just look at Sarah Cooper's amazing, hilarious, viral impersonations of President Trump. Truly comedic genius, but also disturbing because most of their basis is the actual undoctored audio of the words of the President of the United States. And it makes you wonder, is it even okay to laugh right now? But laughter is part of how we make sense of what's happening around us, and part of how we get through it. And nothing in American culture has played that role more consistently over the years than Saturday Night Live. Over the last few years, they've helped a lot of people, myself included, come to terms with the world around us through comedy. Of course, one problem you have as a presidential candidate, and this is admittedly a very good problem to have, is you also find yourself a little anxious going into Saturday evenings about how you're probably going to be made fun of on national television. Reflecting on the role of humor in our changing lives, I wanted to talk to someone about the role that it can play to simply help us move through the world, and to think about how that role may be shaping the years ahead. My guest today, Colin Jost, who most of you probably know from Saturday Night Live or from his recent release of his very funny and very well-written new book, A Very Punchable Face. And I'm not going to comment on how accurate that description is, though I'm looking at him right now on Zoom. And what I will say is that he's a smart guy. He's a Harvard graduate, studied the history and literature of Russia and Britain, rose up the ranks at SNL, became a head writer, and is now the very well-known, hilarious co-host of SNL's Weekend Update along with Michael Che. He's won 4 WGA awards, a Peabody Award, and has been nominated for multiple Emmys. Colin, welcome and congratulations on the book.
Thank you very much. Thank you for that wonderful introduction. I like your radio voice.
I've been practicing.
It was good. It was convincing.
I should begin by disclosing that we knew each other in college. So we were in the same dorm, in fact. I wouldn't say we were close, but I definitely remember kind of seeing you and had a lot of mutual friends. I should probably begin just by asking, do you ever think back to what like a sophomore Colin Jost or a junior year Pete would have thought about the idea that 20 years later, you would be on SNL and enlisted to do an impression of me as a presidential candidate?
None of those thoughts crossed my mind. Like not a single one of those layers crossed my mind at the time. And I remember when Lauren talked to me about playing you on the show, he was like, I think you just kind of have to. Like, he's like, I think it just makes too much sense otherwise. And I was like, yeah, okay. And it was a very surreal experience. And it's the most, close to home that I've ever been. In terms of, first of all, I never do any impressions, as you can tell from my impression, but it felt very personal in terms of choosing even lines to say or, working on some of the scripts because it, I wanted to do right by you.
But your job is to make fun of the person that you're doing an impression
yes,
of, right? So like,
yes.
Do you feel like, does that feel like ethically complicated or how did you approach that?
I guess it feels comedically complicated sometimes. Huh. Like you're just... Part of the decisions are complicated at our show because it moves so quickly. So you don't always have the ability to look back at something and say, okay, is this really the line we want for this person? Or is this really what we want the takeaway of this sketch to be? You just don't always have that luxury. For everyone, we try to think, is this a fair comment on this person or a fair angle of attack on someone?
So how did you process the experience of just becoming very visible? That must have happened pretty suddenly. I mean, you were doing stand-up and you were a head writer at SNL, but then you flip over and you do Weekend Update. And suddenly, like, you're not just part of this very famous thing. You're a very famous face. And as you write about in the book, very honestly, at first it's not going very well. So, how did you process all of that? How did it change your life? And how did you make sure you're still yourself?
It was very weird because, as I'm sure you experienced, for the, vast majority of my life, I had been completely unknown outside of my family and friends. And you don't really think about who you are in the way how you're presenting to the world. You think about who you are as a person and you try to work on yourself as a person, but you don't think about how you present to society or how you come across on TV or how you come across in the media. You just don't think about that ever. You suddenly get criticism and you suddenly get notes on how you look or how you smile, or you get like very specific comments, both from friends and from strangers on the internet. And you're suddenly thinking of yourself in a whole different way. You're like, what's wrong with me? Why aren't I better at this? Why don't I present better? Why does everyone hate me? You have those feelings. And the weird part is it almost makes you question who you are as a person beyond how you present to the world. And then you just get used to it and you get used to a certain norm or a certain level that is criticism, which is both healthy and constructive and not. And you get used to trusting your own instinct and finding out what your instincts really are in the face of what everyone else is telling you to do. And that takes time and you kind of have to build the courage to do that. And that was actually my favorite thing about writing this book. I did it all in a vacuum. I didn't show it. I showed it to some friends, but I didn't show it to anyone at NBC or run it by anyone in that way. And I feel like it's the purest form of what I set out to write and worked really hard at it. And that was it. I didn't really care about how it was received. And it probably made it a lot better that I wasn't worried about that.
It's a great book.
Oh, thank you. But I had a question for you though,
yeah.
The same question kind of, which is you had the same experience of you had local fame when you were in South Bend, yeah. And then going to the national level is a whole other scrutiny and also level of fame, which must have been jarring at times or required some kind of adjustment, right?
Yeah, it was really, in many ways, it was disorienting and for the same reasons you describe. I mean, as a mayor, you're walking around your city, everybody knows you, right? And they'll come up to you and they'll talk about a pothole or a hot local issue or what's going on in the schools or whatever. But especially in a place like South Bend, where I was on local TV all the time and most residents knew who I was, but it was just in a city, right? So I could go anywhere else. I could drive an hour and a half to Chicago and I'm some dude and I can go about life in a very normal way. And suddenly what happens is there's that same kind of visibility, but it's literally everywhere you go. Now, I didn't really have to confront it that much because I wasn't doing many things other than campaigning, right? It's such a total takeover of your life that, you know, I never really felt that much the difference in being able to like go to the grocery store because, you know, every minute of my time was programmed and it was unlikely I'd even be in that scenario.
I wonder too, when you're talking about being mayor and people coming up to you in problems versus on a national campaign where people are also probably coming up to you with problems. But a lot of things you're faced in, say, debates are really about larger ideas or and I wonder, is it harder or less satisfying to deal in large abstract ideas when you get into foreign policy or economic policy versus when someone's telling you at a specific problem locally and right. You're like, okay, I know this problem. We got to solve this problem.
Right.
It seems like that is a more satisfying way to do politics, which is just to problem solve
right.
Versus having to have sort of sweeping ideas that aren't necessarily changing anything.
Yeah, I think it's true. I mean, it's more satisfying when you have cause and effect, right? It's why to get away from work, I took in my first couple of years to a lot of home improvement because like, you know, you paint something and then it's painted. And it was that kind of immediate reward of solving a problem. And it's the same thing locally. Like it feels great to like, you know, get a pothole filled in. Sometimes I would literally go out with the crews, mostly just to thank them, but also it was like very satisfying to literally just like you scoop this asphalt in there and you tamp it down with this big kind of weight and you're like, oh, that problem's solved, you know, 80,000 to go, whatever. But the other thing that you would confront is the really big things are landing on your desk too. If it's like, just fix this stop sign, that's one thing. But when they're like, just fix racism or just fix homelessness or the crime rate, sometimes you wonder if some, you know, commentators in the media think that there's some big knob in the mayor's office that you could dial up or down on how much homelessness or crime there's going to be. And you just forgot, right?
Yeah.
And so these big, almost cosmic and painful issues that you're confronting are by their nature, like tied in with the national issues that we're facing, right? And I think that's part of what's happening now with basically the hostility between the White House and a lot of local leaders who should be working in lockstep, whether it's dealing with policing issues or dealing with public health. And when you don't have that, it all kind of spins apart because it turns out even the most immediate backyard concrete little problem is connected up to this big picture. It's part of why I ran, was realizing over time as a mayor that the big things were affecting my ability to solve the things that were right in front of me. If that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, the connecting, because things get connected in a way that you don't know exactly what will solve the problem. Meaning if you're talking about solving the problem of homelessness, obviously so much of it is tied to other shifting factors like the economy and do people have jobs and is there mental health treatment? Mm-hmm. One thing I don't understand, and maybe you can enlighten me on this, why isn't there just a massive public works push that just gets people jobs in America and rebuilds all the things that are physically broken about the country, gives people, employs people, makes everyone's neighborhoods, cities look better, feel better to be in, have better transportation? Why doesn't that not get done? Because everyone seems to agree that that's good. Everyone seems to, even people on candidates on both sides seem to talk about this a lot.
Yeah, I mean, Trump talked about this when he was running.
It just doesn't feel like it happens.
Like one of the few things I thought Trump would actually do out of his campaign was this talk about infrastructure, right? Because, you know, he seems to want it. Everybody likes it. It'd be good for the economy. It'd be nice to run. And even that didn't happen, right?
Right. Or even like Obama, when we were coming out of the recession, I remember there was going to be a huge infrastructure push. Mm-hmm. And I kept hearing there's going to be these high-speed trains in California and New York. And nothing happens. And you're like, where does that go? Why does that get defeated? Is that just held up in congressional ways? What happens?
Yeah, I mean, frankly, a lot of it is because it turns out that there was not the political will to pay for it, right? Sometimes people talk about taxes and then programs like they're completely unrelated. Like or are you going to raise or lower taxes? And it's like, well, taxes for what? And if you're going to lower taxes, what are you going to cut? But when you get to Congress, then they say, how are you going to pay for this? Now, today, of course, they're not saying how are you going to pay for this, as we're literally just sending out cash just to keep everybody going. But still, that's been an obstacle.
This is why you and I have to start a GoFundMe to build that wall. What could go, you know what?
We what could possibly go
off the top? Maybe a little off the top, but most of it goes to the wall. That's why we got to do this kind of stuff.
Okay. Well, and you know, the thing that gets me about that is we've seen this pattern with that thing for the wall that Steve Bannon has been indicted over, and the NRA, which turned out, just remember, the NRA, technically a nonprofit, right? Where the owner is like being jetted, or the president is being jetted around the world and has this giant home funded by these contributions. The graft that's going on there is not that different, in my view, from what the president's doing to the entire country, which is, you know, he seems to believe his supporters are suckers who will just send their money or send their votes into this, and then they're laughing all the way to the bank.
It's really funny that there was a whole other scandal that wasn't even on anyone's radar that then Bannon was involved in.
Right.
It was like finding
came out of the blue,
a lost city in the Amazon or whatever that was untouched. And you're like, wow, you can still find new things. Incredible.
To hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV, and be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured. Not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
You can work from the road while turning your vehicle into a powerful high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On a network that covers more roads than any other carrier. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls. Finish up that presentation or answer last-minute emails. Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to see if you're eligible for a free trial today. Based on independent third-party data, always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
When you have health insurance, it's easy to think, I'm covered, no worries. Well, not so fast. Remember, your out-of-pocket costs are not covered by insurance. That can be a lot of money for your family. But how do you know you're not being overbilled? It's estimated that over 50% of medical bills contain errors. Unless you're a billing expert, how do you know your medical bills are accurate? HealthLock can help. HealthLock is a healthcare technology company that securely connects with your insurance. When your medical claims come in, HealthLock technology reviews the claim for errors like overbilling, wrong codes, and fraud. HealthLock makes it easy to find and fix hidden errors, so you pay only what you owe. You can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. To date, HealthLock has helped its members save over $130 million. Bottom line, insurance alone isn't enough. To save, visit HealthLock.com. Do it today before you see another healthcare provider. That's HealthLock.com.
So with production on hold, as these things are happening around the world, you know, as a comic, do you think like, I have to go satirize this? Or do you feel like a lot of us do now that it's kind of beyond parody? I mean, how does comedy and satire even respond to the moment we're in?
Having now extended time away from it, I think it's healthy that for our show that in general, that we have a summer hiatus because, you know, you definitely are, there's moments where you're itching to be back on and you have something you want to say about whatever's happening that week. But it's nice to take a break because you also realize how cyclical things feel and how repetitive things feel. And, you know, people are always like, oh my God, can you believe you're missing this scandal this week? Aren't you killing yourself that you're missing this? And then you realize there's going to be another one the next week, and there's probably going to be another one the week after that. And the strange thing now, I wish we could get a ranking of level of scandalousness of all the things that have happened, because I feel like I'm going crazy a little bit. I've lost all perspective on, in the scheme of history, which events of the last 4 years will actually resonate in years, and how many. I mean, there's certain things that are clearly don't matter at all, like where people were making fun of Trump because he was walking down the stairs in a weird way after his speech at West Point, and everyone talked about that for a week. And you're like, well, that doesn't matter at all. It's the dumbest thing. Who cares? That doesn't matter. But then you're like, he was impeached.
That takes a backseat to Rampgate.
And well, that you assume that's going to make it into a history textbook, but who knows? I don't really. There's.
It
so
feels
much.
Like it's not even in the top five events of 2020 surrounding the presidency.
Yeah, that you could be impeached and it's not in your top five scandals is really, really funny.
You have actually spent time with Donald Trump. I've never met him. He guest hosted SNL. You write about this in the book, and maybe you could share a little bit about, first of all, what that was like, and then how you kind of resolve having interacted with him in a professional environment for a show that went pretty well, and the disaster that his presidency is.
Yeah, I mean, the show itself, on just a comedy level, I would argue, was pretty bad.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Independent of anything else. I mean, if you watch it, he afterwards, I remember Trump kept saying that he improvised the whole show. And I was like,
it's a bit
oh
insulting
my God,
to a writer.
You,
huh?
Thank you. No, I was like, please get that out there. You know, you have hosts at SNL who were from all walks of life, who have all kinds of political views. I mean, we had already had on the show, like, you know, Giuliani and Mike Huckabee and, you know, Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. And when you look at the musical guests and hosts that are non-political that come on, they're really all over the political spectrum too. I mean, people have all kinds right. of, you know, and I think that's a nice thing about our.
Did you even think of him as a political figure when he came on? I mean, this was 2015, right? Did it feel like he was there as a politician or that he was there as an entertainer or something else?
I don't know. Something in between. It really didn't. It was very surreal. I mean, one thing Che always says is like that it's Donald Trump on television makes sense. Donald Trump in politics makes no sense. Like, that's the weird part. It was very, very strange experience. And I, that week, ended up writing kind of around him, I would say. And I would write these drunk uncle character for Bobby Moynihan. And so we wrote one of those where he was basically the platonic ideal of a Trump voter, which was kind of a weird, kind of a fun thing to have in the show where he hosted. And then Cecily and Vanessa and I wrote these porn star characters. And so we tried this idea for the table where they were porn stars who were endorsing Donald Trump for president. This is before, obviously, all the Stormy Daniels stuff came out. And very surprisingly at the time, but maybe in retrospect, less surprisingly, Donald Trump was way into that idea and that made it on the show. And so I think the last sketch of the show ends with Cecily and Vanessa as porn stars endorsing Donald Trump for president. And then Donald Trump turns to Cecily, who's blonde, and says, "Didn't you used to be a brunette?" And I'm pretty sure that's the last line of the show, which is God, in again, watching it in retrospect is so complicated to look at, given everything that's happened.
Because I remember, even in college, I was pretty upset by the Iraq War, what was going on with the Bush administration. I remember The Daily Show at the time being a real kind of almost a relief.
Yeah.
And then I remember also, I want to say not long after we graduated, I remember the White House Correspondents' Dinner when Colbert, standing a few feet away from George W. Bush, gave this amazing, searing, just skewering of the Bush administration and feeling like I'd never seen anything like that happen. It was as if Voltaire had mocked the monarchy, you know, in the court of Louis XIV or something. And yet it feels like all of those things that were kind of rewarding to watch then are kind of harder to take any comfort or pleasure and relief in today, because things are so, in many ways, disturbing and frightening in our political landscape. And I wonder, especially because you don't just write for SNL, you write for the part that is most topical, Weekend Update. Like, how much do you think about humor as relief from what's going on in the world versus humor as an important part of how we deal with what's going on in the world?
I think when you're thinking even back to George W. Bush, I mean, whatever anyone thinks about his policies or people that were working with him while he was president, it's pretty hard to argue that he's not a compassionate man and a decent man. I mean, even if you might say, like, whether it was applied to all these things while he was president or whatever, and who knows what he looks back on and has regrets about or not, I don't know. But you sense there's some moral center in George W. Bush, I think. And when you look at Trump, I think you just don't see that in the same way. You don't, you know, even what his own family is saying, you know, about him. Mm-hmm. And I think that makes a lot of things that you're talking about harder, like in the Colbert way, or in the, because it doesn't feel like it's just sort of going into a strange vacuum or something and not affecting anything, or
It's like pushing on a string, right?
Yeah.
There's no tension there because there's no possibility of experiencing shame. Maybe that's it.
Yeah. There's no shame. I mean, I also think things like that trickle down from whoever's the leader of your country. If your leader's not paying taxes and your leader's, you know, doesn't mind exploiting the system to get wealthier, then why would anyone else? I can't believe people in America aren't like, why am I paying taxes? This guy's not paying, our president doesn't pay taxes. You know, that stuff trickles down. It becomes a mindset.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing is just some sort of compassion for people and trying to figure out how to help, even if it's people just immediately around you. It doesn't have to be some big sweeping political thing. It can just be, how am I helping family members? How am I helping people in my community? How am I help educate people, even, you know, whatever it is, those small things, I think, make a difference over time.
Turning to the book, one thing I want to ask you about is a lot of the really funny moments in the book are also very self-deprecating in many cases. And that's a big part of comedy, right? It's a big part of humor. One of the more interesting specials I saw recently that I think got a lot of people's attention was Hannah Gadsby, who obviously is coming from a different perspective, but was talking about how in her case, the kind of self, at least I took it to be saying that the self-deprecation involved in humor kind of crossed the line into abuse or self-abuse. And, you know, the psychology of comics, I think, is something that's always kind of under the surface. And we're in a moment where I think people are talking more about mental health, talking more about kind of how they relate to the world and being more open about these things. And I wonder, do you see like comedy changing in that way? And especially being in a very intense community of comic actors and knowing that SNL has a history of some of the best comedy the West has ever produced. And also like a history of like a lot of, you know, bad things happening to people who are on the show.
Yeah.
I guess the question I'm asking is like, is comedy bad for you? It's great for us.
Sometimes. I mean, I think the vast majority of comedians wildly fluctuate between periods of confidence, sometimes extreme confidence, and then debilitating depression and debilitating self-doubt, you know, and you see people, even people that look like they have a ton of bravado on stage, so many of those people are the most vulnerable people you'll meet and, you know, off stage are constantly worried about whether they're funny, are they any good at it? And meanwhile, you think they're the most confident person in the world. You look at someone like David Letterman, and he always talked about how every show he was like, I'm just not funny. I can't do this anymore. Like, I'm terrible. And I think part of that is healthy because part of it makes you try to keep getting better. and pushing yourself to find some kind of new level or challenge yourself to get out of a rut. And then some of it is not healthy, and some of it is just makes your life miserable and prevents you from enjoying even the successful moments in your life or the things that feel like victories, which are usually few and far between, even for someone who's very successful. And I think that's just the reality for a lot of people in comedy. And that's why I have a lot of empathy for comics who go through lots of different things, because I know that that's, you know, there's lots of comedians who are alcoholics, or I think so many are either alcoholics or recovered or sober now, because that's one way of dealing with the wild swings of, you know, when you're on stage and it goes great, you want to keep that feeling going. And you're like, I'm going to have 2 to 12 drinks. And then when a set goes horribly, you're like, I want a drink to forget that I just had a horrible set. And that becomes a way of life. And then say you have a few drinks before you go on stage and you do well, you know, there's not only a superstition, but almost a feeling like maybe I need that every time. Maybe I need to be a little drunk before I go on stage. Like people go through, and then you're like, I will drink. And then you have a bad set and you're like, damn it, I do need to. And people, you get into all these habits that you have to be really, you have to be really vigilant to break things like that, and really have, you know, have help, have therapy, and also have, and do self-reflection, which is hard to do. And sometimes that's the last thing you think about is mental health. And that's the nice thing now. I do think people are talking about it more and giving each other a little more leeway, or I hope. I mean, that's the goal.
To hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like Eco-Eye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV, and be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
You can work from the road while turning your vehicle into a powerful high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On a network that covers more roads than any other carrier, connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to see if you're eligible for a free trial today. Based on independent third-party data, always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Today, more than ever, we're all looking for ways to save, especially on medical bills. But where do you start? Unless you're a medical billing expert, finding savings can seem impossible. And who has the time? HealthLock can help. HealthLock is a healthcare technology company that securely connects with your family's insurance and reviews your medical claims as they come in from your healthcare providers. Then, HealthLock's technology flags and alerts you to any errors like overbilling, wrong codes, and fraud to help you and your family save. You can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. To date, HealthLock has helped its members save more than $130 million. Saving on medical bills starts with knowing where to look. HealthLock makes it easy to find and fix hidden medical bill errors. To save, visit HealthLock.com. Do it today before you see another healthcare provider.
Another pressure that you mentioned in the book is when, and I'd never thought about it this way, but when you become head writer, you take on this responsibility of basically over the careers of the people that you work with, deciding whether to go to bat for a certain sketch, worrying not just about how it'll reflect on you if it doesn't go well, but, you know, will it be bad for them? And it just reminded me of so many of the pressures that I think people go through when they first find themselves with responsibility.
Yeah, it's where my Catholic guilt really kicked in from every angle, because I feel guilt about what if my own sketch is on? Is that bad? Should I be trying to get someone, you know, is it feel like I'm promoting my own thing, which I always try not to do. If I'm going out on a limb and for a young writer who's at the show and saying, hey, this sketch is really good, we should put it on the show. And then it either doesn't do well or Lauren just doesn't like it for some reason, then I almost feel like I'm jeopardizing a writer's career. There's a strange balance. Yeah. Like you almost feel like you have to trust your instincts, but you also have to pick your battles a little bit.
That makes me think about just how powerful of a name or an institution SNL is. And one of the things that was important in my life was, you know, I was part of a lot of institutions that had very powerful names, Harvard, Oxford, the United States Navy. But one of the most important steps in my life was when I kind of left the warm embrace of a lot of institutions that spoke for me, left my job and went out to run for state treasurer in Indiana, where nobody had heard of me. I wound up getting clobbered. I lost like 60-40. I was a Democrat in Indiana in 2010. Not a great year to be running statewide. But it was that step that put me in on kind of the path to being able to serve my city as mayor and then eventually run for president. Yet I found even running for president that often as people were figuring out who I am, the shortcut to that was good or bad, was looking at any kind of big name I was connected to, whether it was McKinsey, the consulting company I worked for, or Notre Dame, even though I wasn't an alum because it was connected to my hometown. And so one thing that you're very open about in the book is you're thinking about what comes after SNL, which feels to me like it kind of rhymes with that sort of moment, which is frightening and full of possibility. And I wonder, first of all, why'd you decide to share that? Because, you know, usually you don't telegraph career moves in very public ways when you're very visible.
Especially with a book, you don't know the timing of exactly how it's going to come out or when or what. It's hard to put a date on something.
So what made you decide to be open about that? And then how are you thinking about this process?
Well, first, when you're talking about the different institutions, I mean, it's a very strange thing because you have to be, you know, first of all, maybe you were the same way. Like, you know, I grew up in Staten Island. I certainly didn't grow up assuming I could go to Harvard or that I could work at SNL. Yeah. Like those just weren't things that I thought I could do. And then going to these, you know, Harvard definitely being an institution and even SNL sometimes feeling like an institution. I think you have to approach when you're at a place like that, I think you have to have a healthy skepticism about the place you're at. I think you have to be examining the institution you're at and just trying to figure out the ways in which it's broken or the ways in which it just needs to be updated or I don't know, or better run or whatever. You have to, there's everything, you know, things are around for a long time. And so that means there's probably something there that's worth keeping, but you also have to keep reexamining it or else it doesn't function right anymore. Or, you know, things have to keep evolving, I guess is the word that I'm looking for. And unless they do that, then I think they wither and they die. And I think that's why you have to always, I think it's good to be an outsider and come in and look at something and say, all right, I want to do things a little differently, even if it's my part of it. It starts with that. Because when you start as a new writer or you start as a freshman at Harvard, you're not going in and saying, now let's let's restructure this institution. You're more like, I want to figure out how I want to do this as much as possible and be aware of some of the downsides of it.
You talk about a kind of search for belonging. It's a theme that comes up in the book that resonated for me because it was a big theme of my campaign too, was trying to respond to this kind of issue or even crisis of belonging that I think is playing out for different people in different ways. It sounds like you found it at the Lampoon, the humor magazine that you were part of at Harvard. You found it as a member of the SNL cast. I wonder how you would think about building a sense of belonging when you do go walk out from being kind of in the embrace of something as big and famous and as tight-knit as a place like SNL.
That's absolutely the scariest part about leaving. And I'm realizing, I mean, part of it was writing the book and part of it was just, you know, thinking, reflecting back on SNL and growing up in Staten Island. And so much of my life is so community oriented. Like my favorite parts of life are community oriented, are feeling like I'm with friends. I'm with people who I can joke with and work with and live with, you know, and that's, I think, the most valuable thing. And again, there are medical studies that show when you're part of a community, you're physically healthier, you're happier, you're healthier.
It actually relates to life expectancy. You know, even.
Yeah, totally. It totally relates to life expectancy, heart disease, all these things, mm-hmm. because you feel like you belong somewhere.
You know, one other thing I noticed in the book, it feels to me like you go out of your way to mention, to name some of the people you worked with, people who influenced you, other writers, other comedic actors. So very curious looking to the future, if there are two or three names of people that most of us haven't heard of who you think might be shaping comedy or satire entertainment in the next decade?
Well, I think, you know, at SNL, I think right now there's a group of writing supervisors who I think they're going to be very important, both at our show and beyond our show in their careers, which is Fran Gillespie and Anna Dresden and Sudie Green and Streeter Seidel. Sam Jay, who's a writer at SNL, just had a special that came out that people should check out too. It's really funny. And I stand up is so hard now because I haven't been in a club in 6 months to see who's coming up and who to look out for. Mark Normand was, you know, super funny. Andrew Schultz, those were guys that we came up with together. We're all Che being someone that I loved as a stand-up and then getting to work with as a writer and then getting to work with for Update has been a very cool journey. And you know, I think we'll look back on a lot of those years and what happened and be very happy that we got to go through it together. You know,
we're weeks away from an election that's going to change American history one way or the other. Do you think that humor is going to have a different role in our lives in the decade ahead? Or is this just variations on a theme?
You never know exactly how comedy is going to change until it does. And then you look back, you know, we were talking about Steve Martin the other day and how much his comedy was a reaction to coming out of the Vietnam War in such a heavy political time. And then his comedy was so absurdist and so just fun and an escape in a whole different way that was completely apolitical. And so I could certainly see something happening in that way and people needing an escape from everything, feeling very overly scrutinized politically at every turn. I could definitely see that happening. But the biggest thing is you don't exactly know where the next generation of stars is going to come from. You know, I think that each generation makes the previous one either relevant or irrelevant. And so I don't know what it's going to do for comedy quite yet.
I'm struck by how Colin and I basically lived across the hall from each other in college about 20 years ago, but didn't know each other that well, and are now encountering each other in what feels like a different life for each of us, having a really substantive, fascinating conversation. It also shows you how you never know how you're going to cross paths with somebody again in the future. And with every part of our society changing right now, I'm wondering what role humor is going to play going forward. For as long as human beings have faced major events, humor has helped us process and think through it all. There's a case to be made, it's actually going to be more important than ever in the years ahead. And I'm really grateful for people like Colin who are bringing their talent for making us laugh into our lives. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
To hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV and be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Got menopause? We've got you. Hi, Jackie here, founder of ExoJackie. Feel supported throughout your menopause journey and beyond with our organic protein powders and symptom relief boosts. Formulated to keep bones and muscles strong, ExoJackie products help reduce bloating, hot flashes, and weight gain. Enjoy 20% off with promo code EXOPODCAST. Shop now at ExoJackie.com. Made for women by women.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
With dozens of streaming services, box office films, and content to choose from, people are spending over 2.5 years of their lives searching for what to watch. But The Hollywood Reporter brings you THR Charts, one place for you, your family, and friends to find the most watched TV shows and movies every week. THR Charts is a guide to help you spend less time scrolling through platforms so that you can spend more time watching and binging the content everyone is talking about, all supported by data and trusted sources like Nielsen, Comscore, and Paired Analytics. Check out THR Charts on HollywoodReporter.com.